Suits and Sanders is a leadership and legacy podcast that seeks to address the key leadership issues in business, government, and personal or self-leadership. Our objective is to raise the awareness of the crucial role leadership plays in almost every tangible achievement of personal and institutional goals. At the core of our mission, we believe every person is born with a special gift to lead an impactful life and to massively contribute towards the success of the nation and our posterity. The name Suits and Sanders reminds us that great leaders are first servants. So we believe you're going to massively be impacted with the content we'll bring you, and we hope that you're going to maximize your potential with the objective of maximizing your contribution to the nation, but above all, to leave an impact on this generation and to the entire posterity. So join us on this journey. Hello, podcast family. This is Moses Chavi, your host, bringing you again another episode on Suits and Sandals, your leadership and legacy podcast. Today, I'm excited because I'm speaking to a good friend of mine, a son of the land as well, and a trailblazer, Kombolelo Watyoka from Zimbabwe. I always say he's a son of the soil because he's worked and learned across the continent. He's from Zimbabwe originally, spent his time in South Africa. He's a multifaceted guy. He did his studies in finance and IT. The first time I spoke to Kombolelo, I always laughed about his journey because I found it to be both complex and quite rich. And it was amazing when he told me that most of the things that God led him into were more of something he didn't expect, but somehow it has all fallen together. And today, Kombolelo is working in Saudi Arabia, heading an IT department of a local conglomerate. So, Kombolelo, before I exhaust your whole bio, I would like to welcome you to Suits and Sandals. So, welcome.
Moses, you're too kind. Thank you for having me on the show. I hope I can inspire one or two people with my life story.
Awesome, awesome. So, Kombolelo, I love to call you KB because it makes life much easier. In terms of our today's subject, which is identity, family, and goals, you are quite passionate about all these subjects. But before we delve into the subjects, who is KB and what is your life story?
Well, I hope I can be brief on this one. I'm a 38-year-old father of two teenage boys, Jeffrey and Devon, who are 15 and 12. Though I'm passionate about family, I'm divorced, and it's not something I'm proud about. It has actually taught me the value of family even more. I'm blessed to have both parents still alive at 77 and 70, and all my three siblings. So I'm also a son, a brother, and a friend. Satisfaction in my life will be achieved by me being able to create opportunities for those less fortunate than I am. And most importantly, providing a place that people can find hope and strength to do life. My life dream is to build an interdenominational church and a non-fee paying school in my rural home called Mondoro in Zimbabwe for all children from disadvantaged backgrounds. And I'm not talking about the shining stars who get 90%. I'm looking for a home for where everyone can find hope. But this school must principally have world-class facilities and standards. And as far as my investments go personally, they are all geared at developing and sustaining this vision. I draw my vision of life from my youth. I used to spend every holiday in my rural home called Mondoro, as I've said, until I was 17. I go home whenever time and opportunity affords me, but with the COVID pandemic, that has not been possible. Nevertheless, what pains me the most whenever I go home is seeing some brilliant minds I grew up and played with living their lives, unable to make their mark in the world, and still living in the same round huts that they grew up in with their parents, without the opportunity to demonstrate their gifts and talents. So, you know, even the ability to draw a living from that, it pains me. But ultimately, the goal and vision is that each one of us must contribute to the development of our modest village, because I'm not mistaken to think that I alone will be able to be the Messiah for my village, but I think that as a corporate team of like-minded African youths, we should be able to do that. But you were speaking about where I came from. So left high school, no money at home. There was no money at home. I decided to study as a radiographer to fund my software or my programming classes. That led me to go for an industrial attachment where I was offered a permanent job in the business development
Wow.
of a shipping company. Things obviously in Zimbabwe took a turn economically around 2006, and I then migrated to South Africa. I started off as a security guard. While I was a security guard, by just being at a place where when people had a problem, I put my hand up and said, how can I help? Got me the opportunity to get a job. And then I started working as an administrator for a lighting company called Logan's Originals. But nevertheless, I then transitioned to retail, where I grew in a short space of time until I became a general manager. Mistakes and all.
Wow.
Yeah. So from IT to security. I know what you
mean.
Oh,
man.
So then my then wife we were supporting each other. And through the challenges, she was working as a waiter. And the stress that she was going through, I asked her, you know what, stop working, go to school, I'll fund it. And that's it. It went as planned. She found a job. She was able to assert herself in a career. Then I resigned and I started off again as an applications consultant, as a junior applications consultant. This was now in 2013. Mm. I've had a number of careers. Now, from the time I grew up, I obviously wanted to be a software engineer. But because opportunities didn't allow, I found myself taking a winding road. Nevertheless, because I ended up in a general management position, I found it quite critical for me to understand the world of finances. And that's how I got my first degree, which was in accounting science. I would have thought of doing my articles, but at that point in time, my family was already quite grown and I had children and bills to take care of. So I spent a lot of sleepless nights in trying to master my skill so that I could provide for my family. But what I just wanted to say is that every experience that I've gone through in life, from lacking finance at home to working as a security guard to then transitioning from working in South Africa where I was a consultant to the point that I'm now head of IT PMO for a family conglomerate here in Saudi Arabia, I see that God doesn't discard your dream. You know, there's an African saying that the river flows to the sea, irrespective of the obstacles that it faces. And I'm glad that God gave me the strength to continue with my dream. And this is where I find myself today.
This is so impeccable. And as you were talking, my thoughts were lingering around all the big stories that we chase and hear about famous people, celebrities, people who've done abnormal, massive, exponential stuff in the world. And yet we ignore these subtle stories from sons and daughters of the continent. And here you are with a big testimony, like, you know, catching on a background which someone would be inspired. A young man, a young lady just sitting somewhere trying to go through life. They would listen to your story and be inspired and believe that it's possible to take responsibility at a tender age, but as a security guard, having sights of the future and believing God that you can actually pull through to be where you are today. And I know that your dreams are coming to pass and you still have audacious goals that you are yet to achieve. And I believe that you'll be able to achieve those. Now, KB, I want to ask you about another important subject, which is our generation. I believe that there's a big difference that you and me, we can see in our generation today compared to our fathers and mothers. In your words, in your own words, what is the greatest shift or difference you have seen between our parents' generation and our generation today?
It's a very important question that you ask, and one that I wish I had more time to think about. But from my experience, I think the biggest difference between the generation of our fathers and our generation is the disconnect with our roots or the loss of identity. Additionally, the breakdown of the family unit. It's could be because of divorce, individualism, but majorly it's precipitated by economic migration. Our cultural and moral values are being lost as we adopt the cultures of the societies we find ourselves working. You know, simple things like greeting strangers. When we were in school, you would greet every teacher along the corridor. But nowadays, we pass each other in the same offices that we work as we are going up and down the stairs without even saying a word. Respect for elders, getting up, letting them sit in a bus or take an advanced position in the queue in the stores. Our language has suffered the most because almost all our migrant children are unable to speak our native languages. And for me, the question you would ask me is, why is this important? I tend to look at the example of China and the Middle East. They've spent huge amounts of money understanding whether it's the American, the British, whatever civilization or way of life. But they've retained their core cultures and beliefs. Their communities have been able to retain their heritage. And I believe is the foundation for development. And identity, amongst other things, encompasses things like our cultural beliefs, our qualities. It's a self-construal. Identity has to do with self-construal. The reason why I believe Africa continues to struggle or to assert itself in the global paradigm is because we fail to assert what our identity, what our values are. Yes, we have done that academically. We have been able to export brilliant minds all across the globe, but it's the small things like our mother tongues that have suffered. Now, I want to call that an identity crisis that we're suffering from. The two key things that happen with identity crisis is that people fail to understand us. And I'm going to be unpopular in my next statement. We have religious beliefs. We have religious beliefs that come from the Middle East. We want to follow a system of social organization that either comes from the West or from the Far East. And our value system is everywhere. So, you know, capitalism, socialism. And I'm saying, how do people understand us if we don't have something that we stand for? What has it resulted in? We've therefore become codependent. In a healthy society, we are supposed to be interdependent. But in Africa, unfortunately, there's this donor mentality. You know, other people will come and do it for us. But, you know, that identity dissonance actually aggravates Africa's decline. Because we cannot say to the world, we are Africa, and this is what we stand for.
I can't say it any better than you have. I know that on the continent today, or even in the diaspora, there are so many voices addressing these subjects. But somehow, it's very important that we bring them back on the table until we ourselves, you and me, understand the repercussions of our actions today, even towards our children, and how that is going to impact the posterity, and to really see what legacy we want to leave behind.
I was just saying, think about it. You would have raised your kids in the Middle East. There's no permanent residence in Saudi Arabia. There's no permanent residence in Bahrain. Or the UAE recently. But then imagine that child having to go back home to make a life. They can't identify with their own people, yet they can't identify with the people that they grew up in. That's why I said it's an identity crisis. When they struggle then to assert themselves in either worlds is because they don't know who do they relate to. it requires such strength of character. That's the challenge we now have as parents.
And this topic is also touching on what we call the fast-moving world today. But apart from that pace, you know, where we say, oh, it's a fast world, everyone is hustling, and people who have no foundation at all and no care to establish a proper career or business understanding, they still want to just get on the fast train. And now we have created somehow, I'm saying we, because we are part of this cohort, especially we, the millennials.
Understood.
We have created this, yes. So we have created this environment that easily dislodges our purpose of existence with temporary wins of we are living large, you know, and the love of shiny things. I addressed this topic in the previous episode that I had. I had a talk with Njabulo Ngidi of South Africa. But from your own perspective, how can we, especially the millennials and those coming after us, navigate this crazy tide?
Two words come to mind: purpose and balance. If we acquire wealth or if we achieve success, that is not governed by purpose. That is all that it is. It's material success. It will fade as our lives fade, because we have kind of put our material needs on a pedestal, life's purpose just down to material wealth. And materialism, in my opinion, at its core, it's an expression of innate discontentment, or it's an expression of insecurity or fear. It could be the fear of rejection. It could be a need for acceptance. But if I go back to my religious beliefs, and here I'm Christian, positions in and of themselves are not wrong, but you're expressing an unhealthy attachment. I myself, until 7 years ago, I was stuck in the same trap. I had to drive a nice car. I had to live in the best neighborhood. And my materialism was grounded in a fear and the need for acceptance. Fear in the sense that I will not be accepted, or fear of rejection. And there's a need for respect. And we assume that we will get this respect from the material wealth that we possess. Now, deferring to my Christian belief, wealth is pointless unless it has a purpose.
True.
We need to realize that material goods are superficial, and they are only relevant as far as we are relevant. So, for example, if a new iPhone comes out, the old one is irrelevant. But then notice that, what am I achieving by trying to have the latest and greatest cell phone? And I think we need to ask this in the context of, do I need to have or to show this bling? Or do I identify with a purpose that is higher than my own self-gratification? For example, we see adverts on YouTube every day: feed a child for $1 a day. So am I saying that I'm willing to spend $1,000 every year just so that I gain acceptance with my peers, with the knowledge that 1,000 children could have eaten for just one day based off that one purpose? I mean, based off that one meal. You know, look at guys like Bill Gates. If you look at their philanthropy, it's just a reflection of the fact that there's a limit to what money can do. You can satisfy yourself to an extent, but beyond that, you draw no satisfaction. And I wish we could learn from these examples earlier, because then we wouldn't be in these traps, and therefore we can more quickly invest in our rural homes. We can more quickly invest in the disadvantaged communities. We can more quickly invest in the improvement of roads in our neighborhoods, so that another child has an opportunity to learn and to help in the continual transformation of our organization, over the self-satisfaction that comes from possessing this material world.
Perfectly said, KB. I know that also resonates with the current vibe that we are going through regarding the African continent. I believe most of us Africans are very excited about the season that we are going through. It's more like we have gone back to the days of Kwame Nkrumah when he was working hard with Julius Nyerere, and we're talking about Jomo Kenyatta, the African Union, like when the guys were coming together and saying, can we come together as a continent, not just to fight against the West or Europe, but to form a base which defines us? And based on whether it's the Intercontinental Trade Agreement or anything that's happening now, the diaspora coming back on the continent, you know, people touting Rwanda, Ghana, Nigeria, South Africa, Tanzania, and some of those economies that are welcoming lots of the diaspora. Beyond all the facade that we can see, how do you believe as Africans we can actually take advantage of the tide? I've ever heard a saying that says, when you see a wave coming, that's the right time to jump into the sea.
Ride
but
the
if
wave.
You don't jump on the wave, exactly. If you don't ride on the wave, then you're going to miss it. Do you believe there's a better way that, beyond the excitement, we can actually take advantage of this season and do something about it?
I definitely believe that. I want you to look at, you're from Malawi, I'm from Zimbabwe. We are already starting to form partnerships as far as starting businesses, be it in the Middle East, be it in our native homelands. Therefore, the ability for Africans to unite and transform our own continent is there. And it appears as if this is the time where we all can do that. The things that used to divide us, things like communication because of either language barrier or our geographical dispersion, all those barriers have been taken down. We have had diverse experience working in the diaspora, you in auditing, I in accounting, another person in entrepreneurship. I think if you look at how the world is evolving, when we embrace diversity, we are able to come up with things that are more unique. But being Africans, we are therefore able to provide the needs of Africa. I always like to give the example of a lady who started a shoe business in Kenya who used to work for the United Nations.
Yes.
I believe the time is really ripe for Africans to work together and show that in a united Africa, an Africa which recognizes its identity, its own children can take advantage of the resources that are available. The concept of the African Union is a very exciting concept and one that we need to actually embrace. And I don't think this is just a wave, because as human beings, we are recognizing that we are going back to basics. It's African children coming back to their homeland, because it comes from a realization that we may be in foreign lands, but we are not of these lands. There's a home that we can go back to where we do not have to spend money to buy resources or to buy land for me to start a new business. I don't have to go through multiple loops and hurdles in order for me to set up an enterprise. But the reason why this is now more exciting, and I'm saying this is the wave that's coming up, is Moses is from Malawi, Kombo is from Zimbabwe. We come from diverse backgrounds and we've got diverse skills. We are now able to leverage those learnings that we have had from the countries that we are working, and we can use them and apply them in a truly African sense to establish businesses that benefit our own people. If the European nations could form a European Union where there's free movement of labor across the borders, where there's easier trade, the real opportunity that exists is that if South Africa is the country in Africa that has got the most manufacturing capacity or ability, Rather, let's manufacture in Africa. Let's develop our Africa. Because when our resources, including our human capital, is being exported overseas, 9 out of 10 times, or 90% of the wealth that is generated, does not find itself coming back. But if African children are coming back to invest in their homes and they are able to develop businesses that benefit their people back home, the development is and stays in Africa. So the concept of United Africa is one that I'm really for, and I believe that we should aggressively pursue.
Very true. I can't agree with you more. I think there's always an opening in a season or in a generation. I believe what we are feeling today is what our fathers were also feeling at that time. But sometimes what happens is we may sit on this podcast and address these topics, and people may go to conferences, and you may have zillions of webinars where people talk about these things, and people just feel like, oh no, we just want to have those goosebumps of we are feeling good that we are doing something about the continent. We are sons and daughters of the land. And there's no practical thing that's really happening, you know? How can we practically, not just the diaspora, because there's also a dissonance when we focus on the diaspora, that
Correct.
Those who have not gone out of the land, they go like, ah, no, you are acting like saviors, that you think Zimbabwe has been waiting for you, or Malawi
No.
has been waiting for
True.
you. And when you're coming, you want us to come to the airport with flags and saying, oh, okay, back, our saviors back. When we who didn't travel, we have been working the ground, boots on the ground. We have been changing the narrative. And all we need is you to join an existing force. So how can we practically do this? Because our discussion can help someone who's either in the diaspora or they're back home and they're thinking, I need to do something exponential. I want to pursue an audacious goal. I want to start a manufacturing enterprise. Do you think of any practical means that actually that work can start to be done? Or have you done something that you believe someone can learn from?
Until a few years ago, I was one of those people who wanted to go back home with an audacious idea. But I spoke about going back to the basics. A couple of things have happened in countries like Zimbabwe, and the same thing is happening in South Africa. It's unpopular, but it presents distinct opportunities for us to take advantage of, whether we're coming from the diaspora, whether it's those people who are based in our home countries. Africa's biggest resource is its land.
Yeah.
We're constantly crying that we do not have the resources for us to develop our land. The great economies that we speak of nowadays went through a number of years of development, and almost all of them started from an agricultural revolution into an industrial revolution, and now we're in a technological revolution. The good thing is that we do not have to have these things running one after the other. The reason why the land issue in South Africa and in Zimbabwe is so contentious is because the wealth really is in the land. In my case, I have gone back to my rural area. I have started a market gardening practice, which, after paying my parents' salary, generates in the region of $6,000 per year.
Awesome.
It's a small amount of money, but that same amount of money is being reinvested into a piggery project. Our vision is to be able to actually become meat processors. But how have we started? We started by building a small abattoir just to cater for the 10 souls of pigs that my father has. As our enterprise grows, so will our business grow. But we need to move away from this mentality that believes that things will happen overnight. If I need to start by planting vegetables, if I need to start by planting tomatoes or sweet potatoes, I need to start there. But why was I speaking about identity? We have an identity crisis. Our parents went to school on money that was raised from growing cotton, raised from selling sweet potatoes.
True.
They did not have the knowledge to produce these well, to process, to market. We've got all these benefits. That means if those same people were able to then go to varsity in Europe, I'm talking of our parents in the 60s. This happened. I'm not talking about things that have not happened. Therefore, what stops us from using the same resources as a stepping stone for us to build bigger businesses? Start small.
As you're speaking now, I'm feeling like I'm sitting in a coaching class.
I'll challenge you even further. 9 out of 10 times, the first asset that we want to acquire is a house. In the case of my country, a modest home, buying the land and building the property is about $20,000. Imagine what $20,000 invested in a business over 2-3 years could do. You could be buying that house or building that house from the resources that come from a business. It's about changing our mindset. We spoke about materialism earlier. If I think of my comfort today and my acceptance today, I fail to see the future. The Sheikh in Dubai, Sheikh Maktoum, said something that's quite telling. He said, my father used to ride on a camel. I now drive a Mercedes, and so do my children. But in a few years' time, my great-grandchildren could be back on a camel. The point that he was making was hardship actually enables us to develop. Comfort is what causes us to regress. So therefore, let us be careful that the comfort that we have is what's stopping us from seeing the opportunities and the resources that are available us for us to develop.
Perfect. And because these are talks that, especially as learned professionals, we don't really want to talk about. Like, we can sit here and talk about cybersecurity, governance, internal audit controls, and what. But we don't talk about how I can buy 100 goats and start a farm. Talking about buying a goat back home, it's like if I talk about Qatar Riyal, it would be like 75 Qatar Riyal, which is like $20 per goat. But if I buy 100 of those, which honestly, it's really nothing. If you look at the cost, you'd actually start a farm, which in 1 year's time can actually even pay for your children's education. I want to talk about these things.
True. So it's challenging and it's unpopular because it means that I have to forgo some of the luxuries that I would like to show my friends and colleagues that I've made it. But we must also think about life in this sense. The Bible says a wise man leaves an inheritance for his children's children. So wealth is not measured by the amount of money that we have, but it's measured by the amount, by the number of generations that can live off. So if we start planting the right values, even though the farm may not be a success or a resounding success in your lifetime, but we are planting the seeds for our children to be independent and for them to also be entrepreneurs.
I think you've touched upon a very important point here, because that now addresses the question that I wanted to jump into about generational wealth. And you have addressed it well on how we can develop today, work hard today, but dream about what we want to leave for our children and our children's children. One of the topics, I know that we are all cautious of time, but before I let you go, because I'm just basking in your wisdom, and I believe our audience, they will also be basking in this wisdom. Talking about family and talking about generational wealth, you cannot actually pass on wealth to children who are not grounded in principles. So if you've lost it with your children, then definitely what Solomon said in Ecclesiastes, like who knows that your child or someone who comes after you will just destroy your hard work. So if you look at the spectra of parenthood in our time, you would see that, especially our grouping, we are so much into appeasing the appetites of our kids instead of channeling their energy towards strong futures. But without overpraising our parents or ignoring our sincere efforts today, meaning the millennials, there's a clear missing ingredient in the equation of discipline and ambition. So, according to you, KB, what are some of the lessons you've learned in guiding the in guiding our children today? How can we do better to make sure that we leave our worth, our wisdom, and our education in the right hands?
I think that the first and the biggest mistake that we make is that we try and shield our children from challenges. If we show our children the challenges that we are facing and we walk the road with them, they actually grow in character not to be fearful of the challenges that they are going to face in life. We tend to want to send our kids to the best boarding schools, and yet we do not have the finances to sustain that life post our own careers. And I'm not saying don't send your child to the best school. That's not what I'm saying, or to a fancy school. But the reason why I just brought that up was to try and challenge us to say, look, you and I went to mission schools that if we try and Google them on the map, they may still not appear. And yet, from those humble beginnings, we are working and leading teams of highly educated individuals, and we are delivering work that is of a high caliber. So what I'm trying to say is, it's not always throwing money at a problem that is the solution. It's the value that we teach our children. I also realize that when we now become entrepreneurs, particularly in our African, let me say in the Zimbabwean tradition, the kids have never gone to their father's business to work behind the till to understand how the till is operated. They've never performed a cash app at the end of the day. They do not understand the basics of the business operation. Therefore, when the father dies, the business also dies because the person who was acting as a steward is no longer available. I want us to draw lessons from the Jewish community that I've observed. The children from a tender age, they actually start working in the family business. By the time that they're teenagers, they are the ones who are running the family business. Innovation then comes from the fact that they have worked in the business, but they have a new mindset based upon the technologies and the things that they are learning in school. And that business continues to evolve. No wonder why we find us as Africans, our children, 90% of the time, they never take the same careers as their parents. What I wanted to ask you is it not important that we have plumbers? But if we assume that our careers are not respectable, or that my child should become a doctor, they will actually adopt those attitudes, and therefore the plumbing practice will die a natural death because there's no respect for your own career from your own children. This is my thinking in terms of how we can change that.
That's so deep and very, very relevant today. And you've just addressed a very important topic regarding the repeated or recurring failure for African enterprises to see the light of day in the next generation. So it's very important that we start indeed today to teach our kids, at least on a minimum, try to expose them to what we're doing. If we have a business, work with them in the business. It should be their own exposure and learning that causes them to open a second enterprise or get into a different industry. But by far and large, there's a high chance that they will sustain the parents' business into their next generation and even handing it over to their own children. KB, it's been a great and rich time, but I know that you may still be having some burning thoughts in your heart, and I don't want you to go without offloading those thoughts. So, do you have any closing remarks and words, teachings, observations, contributions that you still want to leave with us and our audience?
I think the only thing that I wanted to leave is that we mustn't be preoccupied with wealth being the source of happiness. Our families are the greatest source of happiness. Our relationships are the greatest source of happiness. Ability to contribute to the community is the greatest form of success. I think we need to move away from the mentality that I need to be seen. to one that embraces love, to one that embraces community and charity. You know, research, even at Harvard, has proven that the most satisfied people are the ones that have got the most fulfilling relationships. The most
Wow.
satisfied people are the ones that have find satisfaction in contributing to their communities. Therefore, what I'm saying and what will improve Africa is a move away from me to we. Because our parents, on their meager salaries, they were able to send his own children, his brother's children, and many other children. We have a lot more resources available to us, but those resources somehow are not being able to meet the needs of just our families. Africa is regressing. Let us embrace our true African identity by expressing our love and sense of community. And as we all develop, we all become wealthy. We all become successful. Thank you.
KB, thank you so much for the deep insights. And thank you so much, especially for giving your time to Suits and Sandals, the Leadership and Legacy podcast. And thank you so much for contributing your heart, because what you've shared has not only come from the questions that I asked, but you have lived your life practicing, learning, making mistakes, meeting people, and reading on these issues. And I believe that our audience will benefit, because it's more like heart-to-heart type of discussion and not just a peripheral type of discussion. So thank you so much to our audience. I believe you've enjoyed, and beyond that, you've actually learned from our discussions today with Comborero Watioka. And until the next episode, this has been your host, Moses Chavi. Goodbye.